Malachy O'Doherty joining me this morning. Good morning to you, Mike.
Morning, Malachy.
Good morning. How do you feel about what's just been said?
In terms of the tweet from Alex Maskey, it begins to look as if Sinn Féin's a bit confused about how to respond to the civil rights anniversaries we're coming up to, and there's preparations being made for the 50th anniversary of the October the 5th, 68 March. Last week we had Declan Kearney causing a stir among people by saying on Eamon Malley's website that essentially the IRA took credit for having started the civil rights movement, and now you have Alex Maskey saying, oh no, the civil rights movement, that didn't do the job at all, it took other things to happen, and presumably the interpretation is right, but that's a reference to the IRA. So that's interesting in itself, that this anniversary is coming up and that there's going to be a lot of activity and discussion around it, and that the Republican position is a bit unclear about how to respond to it and about what their own history is on it. The other side of it is that Alex is clearly stalking the SDLP. I think his designated little job at the moment is to needle the SDLP, and he's getting on with it. So unionism getting outraged by what Alex said is fair enough, but it wasn't directed at them. It wasn't about them. It was about the SDLP. It's part of an attack on the SDLP and saying, look, you don't measure up. You didn't really make a significant difference in this state. We did. Therefore, stop yapping. That's what it's really about.
Well, given how unionists ran the state,
well, if you go back 50 years now to the civil rights thing, that was a really, really fascinating period that has to be looked at a lot more closely than people have been looking at it. I mean, do people know, for instance, that many of the leaders of the Civil Rights Association left in 1969 in protest against the association itself becoming too radical? Do they know that the backdrop to a lot of the disturbance on the streets was a split within the Unionist Party with the faction, with Craig and Craig trying to undermine O'Neill, that if unionism had got its act together and was a stable political party at that time, we might not have got Craig doing these stupid things like banning civil rights parades. And the other big thing, there were four reports into the civil rights disturbances, the Bailey report, the Cameron report, the Scarman report, and the Hunt report, and all of them named the RUC as being a major part of the problem. All of them. If the RUC had not been the most incompetent and unstrategic policing organisation in the Western world, by the looks of it, the RUC is depicted by people looking back on it and compared to how the police treated with riots in Paris and in Chicago at the Democratic Convention. If you look at those pictures, you see policemen in helmets with shields, wading into crowds in a very, very determined, brutal way. The RUC were just a crowd of messers. They hadn't a clue. You look at the pictures of them on October the 5th, 68, or at Linen Hall.
The RUC were just a crowd of messers. Can you imagine? Mm. Why do you say that?
Well, I'm saying that it's a valid assessment of the way they got on at that time. They were incompetent. They're standing there in front of big crowds.
They were carrying out the instructions of the state, Malachy.
But I can back this up very, very strongly. I mean, there had been previous major riots in Belfast in 64, two major riots in 64, when Jack Herman in 64 had to order his men to pick up the rocks off the street and throw them back. This was a police force which had no competency at all for dealing with crowds or dealing with riots. It simply hadn't, and it was being administered by William Craig as the Minister of Home Affairs, who simply was trying to generate trouble in the streets to make life harder for Terence O'Neill, his own Premier. And you had the further irritant of the Reverend Ian Paisley protesting against civil rights parades on the grounds that it was a papist plot. I mean, what kind of idiot thought that PD, when we were coming down University Road, the crowd of students in 1968, that we were acting in the orders of the Pope? This is the kind of nonsense that was in the air at that time. But, I mean, at the same time, when you look at it and you unpack all those elements, you also have to look at the Civil Rights Association and People's Democracy. And, I mean, what Cameron called in the People's Democracy the calculated martyrdom, the determination to actually have trouble in the streets, You know, on October the 68th, you would think that the RUC simply just charged, as these brutes charged these civil rights protesters. You know, they lost the run of it because they didn't have the competency to control a crowd. And they were attacked by the Young Socialists throwing placards and banners at them. You know, so there was, you know, it was all as messy then as it is now.
Raymond and Claugher. Morning, Raymond.
Nolan, how are you?
Go ahead, Raymond. Thank you
for
calling.
I want to agree with a couple of points that Mike Nesbitt made there today. Mike said that people make choices, and that is definitely true. The British government made the choice to partition this country against the will of the Irish people. And then the Unionist government made the choice to discriminate against the Catholic nationalist people in the six counties. They didn't give them houses, they didn't give them jobs. They also made the choice to beat them off the streets when they went out to march for their civil rights. These are choices that people make. And when they were being beaten and brutally beaten off the streets, other people made choices to take up a gun to defend the people that were being beaten off the streets. So Mike is right. People do make choices. Now, I heard earlier on there, both Mike and Colm Eastwood are now great advocates for getting back into Stormont. But when Stormont was working, both of them walked out of that.
You're former Sinn Féin, aren't you?
Pardon?
You're a former member of Sinn Féin.
I'm a present member. I'm a current member of Sinn Féin, actually.
Current member.
I joined Sinn Féin very recently because I saw this thing becoming one-sided again. I hadn't been a member of Sinn Féin for years, but there is only one way to solve this problem, and that is a united Ireland.
Malachy?
That's not a solution to the problem at the moment, you know, because there isn't sufficient support for it. If Raymond, as a Sinn Féiner, is saying that he now wishes to reverse the Good Friday Agreement, which accords the principle of consent, you know, then that's very interesting. I'm sure his party leader would be excited to hear that. You know, the reality of it is we have two minorities on the island of Ireland, if you like. We have a you've only one actually now, but essentially you had a nationalist minority. It's not a minority anymore, or a significant minority in within a unionist state, and you have a Protestant minority inside the island of Ireland. Now, whatever way you play this, if you draw the border around the island, and so it's one jurisdiction, then you've got your unionists feeling trapped inside that. And if you draw your border across the island where it is, then you have the nationalists of the north feeling trapped inside that. That's the problem. And the whole point of negotiation in the Good Friday Agreement is to find a compromise that reconciles those two identities. And now we have Raymond coming on and saying we can reverse all that.
Sorry, Raymond, you were trying to speak.
Why should unionists feel more trapped in a united Ireland than nationalists do in the discriminatory six-county statelet?
Well, I'm not saying that one has a greater moral right than the other to be the majority or to have the state identified according to its desires. I'm not saying that, Raymond. What I'm saying is these two factions exist. And, you know, whether aside from the morality of it...
Okay, here's Brian in West Belfast. Morning, Brian.
Morning, Steve. Steve, I need to ask the question I like to ask is, and the very start of the civil rights movement, why didn't the ordinary Protestant working class get involved? I mean, this country would have been a lot better place to live in. Why did they not, for basic civil rights that was crowned out in parts of the world at the same time?
Some of them did, of course. There was Ivan Cooper in Derry. There was Claude Wilton in Derry. There were quite a lot of Protestants involved in the PD, like John McGuffin, for instance, is a Protestant. So they did. But, I mean, I think, you know, there were two major irritants in the whole thing, misrepresenting the civil rights movement as purely a Republican front, and that was Paisley. He actually thought it was a Papist front, and Craig, who was determined to split the Unionist Party and bring down O'Neill. And if you hadn't had that context to it, you might have had a possibility of a non-sectarian civil rights movement.
All right.
Malachy, not Stephen, can I come back there?
Very quickly for me, yeah.
No, I'm talking with the ordinary people, as in the ordinary working class people, Shankar Road, Sandy Road. And we all know about these people getting very good, but the ordinary people, why do they not get involved in the basic civil rights?
Okay.
They were told by their own government that it was a conspiracy to overthrow the state, and they believed that.
Okay.
And most people would believe the government if they're told that.
We're going to leave it there.